episode 178 of
The Cricket Her Weekly.
Now, the 100, first of all, Sid, because what's the current situation, although with a big caveat that this may well be out of date by the time people are watching slash listening to this?
Yes, so as it stands, obviously there's two games happening today. We're recording on Saturday. So, but right now, the Brave and the Pop Chips.
Yes.
Otherwise known as the Northern Superchargers, have both qualified.
Woohoo!
So we've got three teams out now. Phoenix, Spirit, and the Originals are all out.
Okay.
And as I say, things could move on again today. Basically, both Invincibles and the Rockets need to win today. And if either of them drop points, if they lose or it rains, then the Fire will have qualified today as well. And we'll know our remaining teams with six games left. So, you know, the groups, they just have been a bit weird this year. It's been, you know, it's kind of three teams at the top the whole way, really, and, you know, the rest of the teams at the bottom. But, you know, right now, as it stands, it's still possible that Rockets or Invincibles could actually pull it off.
Okay, but also most likely two new teams in the finals, which is really exciting, isn't it? So the Fire and the Superchargers motoring along.
Yeah, the Superchargers are charting, the Fire are on fire.
The Brave are brave. Oh, that one didn't work, did it, Sid?
Not really.
Okay. Now, we actually attended the 100 yesterday, but not in the media centre. So it was the match at Lord's. It was the London Spirit against the Pop Chips, against the Superchargers. We were in the crowd, and that was a whole new experience, wasn't it, Sid?
Yeah, we were in the grandstand. We came along with a friend of mine who is someone that's watched a bit of cricket on television, but it was the first professional cricket game that he'd ever been to. It was his first time ever at Lord's.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't hugely familiar with kind of the 100 as a concept, so he wasn't sure about how the overs thing worked. He had to ask about that.
You had to say, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to use the word overs because that doesn't exist.
Yeah, we had to stop the stewards from ejecting him from mentioning the word overs. But no, seriously, he enjoyed it. And, you know, we did as well. We had a great time. There's a couple of observations that we made from being there in the crowd, because it is a little bit different. It's just nice to have a different view sometimes,
yeah,
I suppose. You
definitely.
Know, and literally a different angle, because we're side on rather than, you know, we're almost invariably behind the bowler's arm when you're in the media centres and things.
Yeah.
But a couple of things. So, you know, we went and bought a drink, didn't we, Raf? We went and bought four drinks. We bumped into another friend there as well. I said, I'll buy you a drink.
We weren't wearing our press passes, though.
We weren't. We were there as spectators,
yeah,
to have fun. So we went and ordered four drinks.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, sorry, I can't sell you four drinks. I have to sell you two drinks, and then I have to give you your card back, and then you can order another two drinks, and then you can buy them as well. And it's just like, and he was like, it's licensing reasons. And it's like, what's going on with this? I mean, just like, it's a total dance. Because Westminster City Council, who issue the licence for Lords to sell alcohol, must know that this is going on.
Yeah.
So they've said, well, you can only buy two drinks at once, but you can then immediately buy another two drinks.
Yeah.
What a waste of everybody's time. It's
very
just
weird.
Very strange.
Yeah.
So that was strange. The other thing I wanted to raise was a little observation that my friend made. As I say, he's watched a little bit of cricket on television, so he basically knew what was going on.
Mm.
And he understood that in cricket you can't really tell who's winning and who's losing. But what he did observe, that he had absolutely no context during the second innings about how well the Northern Pop Chips were doing. He was like, well, but how many, you know, did Spirit make at this point?
Mm.
You know, when they had the 50 overs, 50 balls. He was like, okay, well, they've got, after 50 balls, how many have they got? And then, in fact, then, they did immediately, actually, on 50 balls,
yeah,
they did say
the crowd announcer said,
at this point,
the London Spirit had made this many for this many
but
goals.
That was the only time,
yeah,
they did that, and there was no other indication in-game about how well the Pop Chips were doing in,
yeah,
their chase, and he really felt that would have been something that would have been more useful. So maybe that's something that they could, you know, consider in terms of, like, being able to incorporate that a bit more so that those more casual fans can have a vague idea about how well the chasing team is doing.
One other thing that I thought was a bit weird was that I was coming back to my seat and somebody was in the middle of bowling a set. I got to the top of the stairs and I waited, and the steward turned around to me and said, oh, don't worry about that, you can go back to your seat whenever you want, this is the 100, we don't bother about that, which I thought was really interesting. So they've obviously abandoned this idea that you can only go to your seat between sets or between ends or whatever it would be. in the 100. That's clearly never been a thing.
That makes sense, I guess, but you know.
Well, does it make sense? Because wouldn't that be really frustrating from a spectator experience perspective to just have people continually? I mean, that's why they do it in other forms of cricket, is to prevent people interrupting your viewing experience.
Yeah, I mean, people came and sat down next to us, you know, or in front of us when things were going on. I didn't really have a problem with that. I didn't
want to have. No, but because they weren't doing it multiple times frequently. Anyway, interesting. It's obviously been drilled into the stewards. This is the 100. This is it's a very different experience.
Yeah, we need to try and create that kind of simplified experience, which means we don't implement silly rules except about buying beer. But of course, that's not doing. The beer thing's nothing to do with Lords. This is Westminster City Council
that's our understanding.
Imposing a bizarre set of rules. That.
Anyway. Okay, so that was yesterday's match, and obviously the Pop Chips ended up winning off the penultimate ball, so it was a good one to take your friend to, because it was an exciting finish. Now we are going to talk about the elephant in the room, which is the England squad. Big news this week, but before we do that, actually just yesterday, there's been some very bizarre news coming out of South Africa, hasn't there, Sid?
Yeah, I mean, there was actually two separate pieces on Crick Info by Firdaus, who's the kind of the women's cricket, South Africa cricket correspondent from South Africa. And the long and the short of it is that it seems that Sine Luse has basically asked to step down from the captaincy of South Africa. You know, the original thing was that she's stepping down, and then it was like, well, she's asked to step down, and it was her choice to step down. She was given the captaincy, though, wasn't she, Raf, only, you know, 6 months ago?
Yeah.
And, there seems to be some issue with the coach. What's going on?
She actually led them to a World Cup final. That's been something that she's done and achieved for them as a team. There was an earlier piece, maybe a week or a couple of weeks ago, about Hilton Marenga, the coach, with basically suggesting that some of the players had written to Cricket South Africa and said, actually, we're not massively happy with Hilton, so could you find somebody else? And the board have basically said, no, we're sticking with him. And the reaction to this seems to have been that Sine Luse has therefore said, okay, well, I'm not going to be the captain anymore. And they're now talking about maybe bringing in like Laura Wolver or somebody like that as captain. But given that the letter saying, please, can we get a new coach, seems to have come from a collective of players, it's not a very good example of happy times in South African women's cricket. And we've seen quite a lot of that recently, actually. I was thinking about the Hilton Marenga thing. Now, you could look at it and go, okay, well, arguably, you know, he's just coached them to a World Cup final, so that's successful. But he's been coach for 11 years. 11 years. That's the equivalent of England still having Mark Lane as their coach.
Wow.
I mean, that's just bonkers, isn't it? So that's who the England coach was in 2012. Since then, we've had four different coaches. I was working this out yesterday. We've had Paul Shaw, Mark Robinson, Lisa Kightley, and now obviously we've got John Lewis. And throughout that whole time, a time of huge change in women's cricket, South Africa have kept the same coach. That's just mad, isn't it? You know, I don't really care how successful you are in a way. There are coaches have a shelf life, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. No one else has carried on that long.
Yeah, so. And the other weird thing, I mean, even with Australia, who have been immensely successful in that time, have kind of burned through coaches because you just naturally do. The other thing that's kind of a bit irritating about it is Cricket South Africa's attempt to present it as, oh, well, it's just kind of natural because Sine Luse was only given the captaincy on a temporary basis, kind of temporarily replacing Dané van Niekerk, and now we're going to make somebody else a permanent captain. And you go, no, we were at the World Cup. We were in the press conference. When you literally said, oh, yes, she's a brilliant captain, and she is now the permanent captain.
She's the permanent captain. Nobody corrected that impression. No. Sine herself said, I
now feel like I am the captain of this team. I'm on a permanent basis and on, you know, going forwards. So it's Cricket South Africa's attempt to rewrite history.
Rewriting history, yeah.
Yeah, so that's very frustrating from a kind of media perspective, because again, it's similar to the stuff that happened last summer with Lizelle Lee, trying to present one thing when actually we know that something else is going on behind the scenes. It's all very strange and really a very unhealthy environment.
Yeah, well, and we just have to see what happens over the next couple of weeks. I mean, the Laura Wolfart thing, I mean, they're the media are talking about Laura Wolfart as the next captain on the grounds that she's the obvious person. But she's best friends with Sine Lu, so I can't imagine that Laura Wolfart's massively happy about the whole thing, seeing as her best mate has obviously been, you know, done over by the system here, and they're trying to rewrite history around that. I mean, Laura Wolfart's going to be looking at that and going, I'm not sure I want to be part of that. Yeah. That doesn't mean that she won't take the job, but, you know, she's definitely... I mean, Laura Wolfart is not stupid, right? No. She's
the opposite.
She could have gone to medical school, and, you know, she's super smart, so she knows what's going down there.
Anyway. Talking of craziness by cricket boards, Sid, let's talk about the England squad. So England on Friday announced their squad for their three ODIs and three T20s against Sri Lanka, which are happening quite soon, almost immediately after the end of the 100, because they've got to fit them all in so that Sri Lanka can fly off to play in the Asia Cup at the end of September. So let's start with the good news. Let's take a positive slant on this, first of all. There's been a couple of inclusions in the squad that we are really excited about. So Maya Boucher is the first one. We talked about her at length on last week's episode, so we won't go into that again. But
not only is she in the squad, Raf.
Well, John Lewis has said that she is going to open the batting with Danny Wyatt in the T20s. So that's going to be great, because she's going to have three T20s where she knows that she's not fighting for her place, and she can just relax into it and have an opportunity to show what she can do in international cricket. So that's really exciting for her. But I was just going to say, suffice it to say, she's very much earned it with her form in domestic cricket and recently in the 100 for the Brave. The other inclusion that I know you're really pleased about, Sid, is Bess Heath.
Yeah, so they brought her in. And again, John Lewis has said pretty much that everybody's going to play. Everybody gets caps.
He kind of has.
He gave himself a little bit of wriggle room, but he basically said that we're gonna make sure that everyone gets an opportunity here, which is itself is quite interesting. It's a little bit of an about turn, because Lisa Kiteley, when presented with a similar question, I remember in a press conference like 3 years ago or so, her going, "Oh, you know, you don't just find a cap lying around. You know, you have to really earn it. So we're not in the business of awarding caps to people just because they've been selected in the squad."
Which is a very Australian attitude, I
must
say.
But this is a very different environment, and I think it's probably the right thing to do. So, so hopefully Bess Heath gets to make her debut. And they've also explicitly said that she's been brought in as cover for Amy Jones. So they're clearly starting to think about, you know, how they move on from Amy Jones at the point where Amy Jones retires or potentially, you know, does get injured. I mean, you know, wicketkeeping is a position where people do, you know, have injuries. So, yes,
that's
on merit as well. Bess Heath's selection, definitely. She's had a really good season. You know, she's been very positive with the bat. You know, I've not shied away from the fact that her wicketkeeping definitely needs work, you know, but, you know, she'll get the chance to work with some different coaches as part of the England squad, which is important for her in terms of like developing her wicketkeeping. Mm. So, you know, great news for her.
Great. Okay. But there's been some odd choices as well. Now, I think probably the strangest for me is the omission of Tammy Beaumont. She is in the ODI squad, as she was in the Ashes, but she's not in the T20.
Well, she's just not a short form cricketer, Raf. There's absolutely nothing that's happened in the past week, you know, playing for Welsh Fire, you know, that's given any indication that she's a short form cricketer.
Yeah. I love that you can say that with a straight face. That's brilliant. Of course, she did have her record-breaking innings.
And she is on our backdrop today.
Had her record-breaking innings earlier this week against the Rockets, where she hit the highest score in the men's or the women's 100, and it was an absolutely spectacular innings. And actually, somebody in the John Lewis press conference said, "John, did you know about the 100 when you were making these selections?"
Did you know about it?
Well, and I'm looking at some of the selections. He doesn't appear to. Was this squad selected weeks ago before the 100 started, in the wake of the Ashes? and just kind of, you know, independently of the 100, which is a fair question. And he was like, oh, no, it's all been done with the 100 in mind. And you're like, what? I just can't understand. And he said, I've had a chat to Tammy, and obviously she's not too happy about it. It's like, yeah, mate, yeah, I wonder why. But he basically said, oh, I know how Tammy will play against Sri Lanka, but I don't know how Maya Boucher will play against Sri Lanka. So I've gone with having Maya Boucher as the opener, and Tammy Beaumont.
Well, you could have made exactly the same argument about Danny White.
Right? I know. I know you can make the same argument about anyone, you know. Well, I know how Sophie Eccleston's going to play against Australia, so let's not bother, because, you know, we might as well bring somebody else in. Anyway, talking of which, there's also a thing where they're resting some players. So Sophia Dunkley and Sophie Eccleston are being rested for both series, I believe, Natsiva Brunt is being rested for the... I need to get this the right way around. Natsiva Brunt's being rested for the T20s. And...
Danny Wyatt's
being rested for the ODIs. Thank you, Sid. So that's kind of your four of your biggest cheeses there.
Now, Raf, I'm confused about this. I'm confused about it because 6 months or so ago, when we were coming up to the WPL, I said I was concerned that the WPL and things was going to start affecting international cricket. And everyone said I was talking nonsense.
They did.
And yet these players have been playing in franchise tournaments. Either played in WPL or played in Fairbreak. And now we've come to the end of the English summer and they're knackered.
Yeah.
What if England knew that Natsiva was knackered, why is she playing in the 100?
Yeah.
Why? You know, ditto Sophie Eccleston. Why withdraw her from the 100? Which is the priority? What's your priority, guys? Yeah. International cricket or the 100?
Yeah.
Or WPL? 100,
apparently.
Or Fairbreak?
Fairbreak, yeah.
I mean, Fairbreak's honestly, the biggest nonsense of them all. Yeah, I've said the unsettable. So Fairbreak is nonsense. It's not a top-level cricket tournament. You know, Fairbreak, a Fairbreak to them, good luck to them, but that is not a top-level cricket tournament. And yet people are going off and paying for it, playing in it, and now coming back in September going, oh, I'm too tired and I'm not going to play in a proper international series where ICC championship points are at stake.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am flabbergasted.
And I just wonder whether some of this is being presented as people being rested, but is partly to save face, because Sophia Dunkley did not have a very good Ashes.
I see you're thinking Dunks might have actually been dropped.
Well,
wow.
It would be harsh, but I wish they would be honest, because she did not face enough balls in the women's Ashes for her to now say, I'm a bit tired to be playing to be playing against Sri Lanka in September. There are plenty more players who face way more balls in the Ashes who could also equally collect, you know, like Tammy Beaumont. I made two double hundreds in that series, and I've just made the 100 against Welsh Fire. Please, will you rest me? But she wouldn't do that, of course. So with the Dunks thing, I'm just a little bit sceptical about that, I have to say. The other thing is Sophie Eccleston. It's so frustrating because we were really critical during the test and we said, you've played one frontline spinner and she's going to bowl an immense amount of overs, and she's got a whole season ahead of her still, and she's going to be really tired.
It's fine. She loves bowling.
She's got really easy action, really repeatable action, and she'll be absolutely fine. And now we're at
10 months later.
Yeah. Oh no, she's too tired to be playing. Well, which is it, guys? It's really kind of short-termism, and also, like, I feel vindicated.
A lack of respect for international cricket for Sri Lanka. It will serve England right if England lose one of those ICC championship games.
It absolutely would.
And because, you know, Chamari Attapattiah has a great game or whatever. And, you know, and they wind up dropping more points, having already dropped points to India as well as dropping a load of points to Australia. You know, England are actually, you know, if they end up having to go through a qualifying tournament because they've dropped points
course,
against Sri Lanka.
Eccleston won't play because she'll be too tired. Anyway, the other thing in the midst of all this is, of course, England have called up Mahika Gore to the squad, 17 years old, seen as the new big shiny thing in fast bowling. Now, that's really exciting for her. But England have this obsession with, like, a big new shiny thing in fast bowling. And it's really not working out for them particularly well. And there doesn't seem to be any level of consistency in the selections in terms of the fast bowling. It's all kind of wham, bam, one person after another. We've had Freya Kemp, who was then mismanaged and got injured. Again, another 17-year-old fast bowler, possibly selected too early.
17-year-old and has already had basically a career-threatening injury.
We've had Emily Arlett, who was in and around the squads last summer and the summer before, nowhere to be seen. Apparently, I've been told by somebody who's been around the Spark squad via Twitter that she's had shin splints this summer. Well, nobody said that publicly. Nobody's made an announcement to say, oh, well, actually, we would love to have had her in the squad, but she's been injured. So she seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth. We've had Izzy
and
Wong.
She is still playing, so.
She is. We've had Izzy Wong. Who was obviously kind of burst onto the scene last summer, was very exciting, hasn't played a game for England. And
she was in all the Ashes squads, yeah. And they didn't select her.
Yeah, and so people were going, hang on, is something going on here? And finally, Birmingham Phoenix this week have actually come out and forced the ECB's hand and said, yes, there is something wrong, her confidence is shot. And so she's actually not going to play in the next few women's 100 games because we need to work on her run-up. There's some kind of technical issue with her run-up. It's like, okay, so did England know about that and they just didn't say anything? Or it's the withholding of really important, relevant information.
And why were they selecting her for the squads? Why do they continue to select a player for the squads?
They know isn't going to play.
Yeah. Almost certainly isn't going to play. Because she's got huge technical issues going on. I mean, and we don't know what the reason for this, but, you know, she's being pushed and pulled around a lot. Yeah. And even Birmingham Phoenix going, oh, we're going to fix her run-up. What, guys, you're going to fix her run-up in, like, a week?
Yeah.
After, you know, a load of different coaches have been presumably trying to fix it for the last year. Yeah. Oh, man. Now,
and John Lewis actually was asked about this in the presser, by the way. He was asked about Izzy Wong, and he said, yes, she has been having issues this summer, and that should have been obvious to everyone. It's like, well, it wasn't actually.
Well, it was obvious she was having issues because she was bowling.
You didn't talk, but you didn't talk about it.
Full toss after full toss.
So if she's having issues, why on earth didn't you talk about it until Birmingham Phoenix forced your hand? And then, we like to have her close by because her confidence has taken a knock, and we think that kind of we want to feel like we're supporting her. And it's just so weird because do you really think that a player gets more out of being 12th man and running drinks with England than they do with being in their region? It shows a lack of trust in the regional coaching system, actually.
Also, she's been around England all that time and they haven't fixed
the
problems.
They haven't done anything, I know. So that's really weird. And also on the Freya Kemp thing, John Lewis said, she's not going to bowl. She can't bowl yet because she's still coming back from injury. Okay, so why is she in the squad?
She's an exciting batter, but she's not.
Two players in your squad who aren't going to bowl. Because Izzy Wong's presumably not going to play unless she miraculously sorts out her technical issues, and Freya Kemp isn't going to bowl. So,
playing Freya Kemp Freya Kemp can give the ball a whack definitely as a batter, and she's a great option to going forwards to have at number 7 or 8. But at this stage, it does not look like Freya Kemp is going to mature into the next Nat Sivar and be able to bat in the top four. Maybe she'll develop out of that, but it's another odd selection.
It's a bit of a risky selection. Anyway, I was on my rant about this kind of chaotic attempt to try and replace Catherine Sivar-Brunt. Freya Davies appears to have been dropped, despite having she has been dropped. She's not in the squads, having played one match in the Women's Ashes, been given one opportunity and one T20 to show what she can do. She played in all the England A matches against Australia A and had the best figures. And Mahika Gore, by the way, also played in those games and had the worst figures. She's young, la la la. But it's not a consistent approach. They're not selecting people based on numbers. And I'm sorry, but you cannot make an informed decision about somebody's abilities in international cricket based on one T20.
Yeah, no. And what have they said about Mahika Gurraf? We shouldn't be too down on her. I mean, she's an exciting prospect, definitely. But let's be realistic. You know, first of all, she's 17 years old. And we've already broken one 17-year-old in the last year, Freya Kemp.
Exactly.
Sadly, a potentially career-threatening injury. Mahika Gurraf has got perhaps a more repeatable action than Freya Kemp, as an argument there. But, Why have they selected her so early? You know, because the numbers just do not justify this. I'm sorry, but I know the ECB's press release said, oh, she led the
attack in the Rachel Hay O'Flynn.
But then her numbers were not good
they
her numbers
been
were good in Fairbreak against a load of associate players, but her numbers in the RHF and the Charlotte was are really not great. The one justification I can think of is they're trying to lock her in. Because obviously if she gets an England cap now, she can't go off to Australia this winter and potentially, you know, pull an Australian cap out of the bag.
Of course, that's interesting. So, you know, so it's to prevent her being poached.
There's the potential for that kind of thing to happen. Mm, so, you know, if Australia were to offer her a load of money, I think she'd only need to live there for a year. So if she went there this winter and someone liked her, they could offer her a load of money to stay for a year and then they could give her an Australia cap and then she'd be locked in for Australia. Mm. So England are going to lock her in by doing this. But otherwise, you know, it makes no sense. I mean, and even John Lewis even said,
he said she's not going to play every game, first of all.
Doesn't mean she's almost certainly going to play, from what he said.
Okay. Well, I mean, presumably they wouldn't call her up. But it does, it's part of this kind of slightly chaotic thing of like, oh, she's exciting. Oh, there's a bit of noise around her. Let's bring her in and play her for a game and see what she can do and chuck her in without there being that kind of consistent, calm approach to actually giving a proper assessment of somebody. So basically, yeah, she's going to play maybe the odd one or two games. And he also said, we're doing that to see if she's ready for international cricket.
To see if she's ready? I mean, don't you know? Aren't you paid to know this? I mean, you know, maybe we should see if Raf's ready. Maybe we should see if my goldfish is ready. I mean, my goldfish died in 1978, and I'm not even 100% convinced the goldfish was female, but, you know, let's see if she was ready.
Let's have a go. Let's see. So it's, again, that line does actually, I must say, smack of slight disrespect to Sri Lanka, because what you're basically doing is going, well, we wouldn't play these players in the World Cup and we wouldn't play these players in an Ashes series, but hey, it's Sri Lanka, so we're just going to throw people in and you know, just see whether they might be ready for international cricket. And again, you can totally see them bringing Mahika Gore in, her getting a couple of games, and then they just leave her out in the cold next summer for another couple of summers, right? Because they'll just go, oh yeah, well, we had a look and we decided she wasn't ready for international cricket. And it was a weird line from John Lewis. It was a really strange thing to say, I think. I think we've ranted about this for over 10 minutes.
Much shaking of the head in Cricket Her Towers.
Yeah, just so many weird decisions, so many weird selections. I just feel a little bit weird about the whole Sri Lanka series now. It feels like it's not being treated massively seriously.
Yeah, and you don't even get me started on Grace Rivens, who has been dropped from the Spirit side by Heather Knight.
Yeah, I know.
And hasn't been given an opportunity by Heather Knight, despite the fact that the people that played with her in those England eight games when she was captain reckon she did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
So, why would Heather Knight want to put Grace Scrivens back in her box? Hmm.
No, sure.
Can't imagine
the reason, Sid. Anyway, let's wrap up there. We would love to know your thoughts on the England squad as well. There's been a lot of chat flying around on Twitter, but please do comment below the line, send us a YouTube comment, send us a comment on Twitter, and we could maybe read some of those out on next week's show when we're going to be...
If they're printable.
Well, we will be at the 100 final, I guess, Sid.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting. Okay. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. See you in a week's time. Bye.
Bye.